Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If you're listening to the live stream in the UK, good morning. If you're listening in Australia, and good whatever time it is if you're listening elsewhere. This is Radio Edutalk. I'm John Johnson. I'm sitting in Glasgow, connected to David Noble. And tonight we have got a guest, Greg Whitby, from Sydney. Greg is Executive Director of Schools and is in charge of a huge number of schools and teachers. Got a great blog, lots of good stuff. Good evening, Greg.
Good evening to you. And it's a beautiful sunny autumn morning here in Sydney. And it's great to be with you.
Okay, it's nice to be with you too, Greg. I'm just swapping lots of earphones in and out of my ears, trying to hear different bits and make sure everything's going okay at the moment. So I think we'll just and maybe you could tell us a wee bit about yourself, your background, and we'll take it from there.
Okay, I've been involved in education for over 30 years. I started out life as a primary teacher and then a secondary teacher. I've worked in both government and non-government schools, been principal of school, taught at university, a whole range of things. I think every one of those jobs has been fantastic, but I couldn't have asked for a better position I have now. I've been executive director of schools in this system of schools for now nearly 7 years, and I was director in another jurisdiction for about 7 years. So I'm about 13 or 14 years sort of leading systems of schools, and we've had a fabulous time in doing the work we do. I could think of no better time to be involved in the work that we're doing in education than now. I know that at every age brings its own challenge because of the context of those age. But we live in a wonderful age. Our world's reshaping itself. Our world, you know, to use that Linda Darling Hammond phrase, Thomas Friedman phrase, is getting flat. Linda Darling Hammond points out the challenges for education in a flat world. We're getting connected in very different ways. We're finding very new ways to work, and it was right at the heart of that is a challenge for our schools. And I love working with practitioners and teachers as they confront that challenge, because I know it's the same for you in the UK or wherever you are in the world. Teachers care deeply about young kids. They are passionate about what they do. There are a lot of claims made about how they respond to these challenges, but I've always found that if you're prepared to work with them and work collaboratively, that you get the change that you need. Our young people deserve nothing but the best, and we need to do a whole lot to equip them to live a full and rewarding life, and that's what we aim to do here. And we can do that by working together with our teachers. Probably a bit long of an introduction, but it might sum up.
I'll maybe just come in here. This is David Noble, Greg. We quite often have some live interaction during the Radio Edutalk shows. So just at this point, if anybody's listening to the live stream, you can get in touch with the show and put a comment or a question to Greg during the next 40 minutes or so. And you can get in touch with the show by email. It's at edutalker, edutalkr, at hotmail.co.uk. Or if you're on Twitter, you can just post your comment or question within the 140 characters, and if you include the hashtag Edutalk, then John, myself, or even Greg will be able to pick that up in real time. And if you're listening to the archive version, then you can leave a comment at edutalk.cc, and we'll make sure that gets passed on to Greg. The way we're looking at the kind of structure of tonight's show is Greg's just going to talk about the kind of main focus of tonight's show, learning in today's world, maybe just for about 10 minutes or so, and then no doubt John and I, and hopefully some people out there listening to the live stream, will have some points to make. So we'll have a bit of a discussion thereafter. And then in the lead up to tonight's show, we've had four questions that have been sent in from followers of Edutalk on Twitter, each person, if I recall correctly, is an educationist in Scotland, and I know that Greg was in Scotland fairly recently, so it would be interesting to get your thoughts on these kind of general education and maybe Scottish-specific questions. So does that sound okay, Greg? Do you want to maybe just start off by just giving us a bit of input?
Yeah, love to, David and John. If I could respond to that by giving you some of the broad parameters of the work that we do and what which gives an indication of what we believe is the key issues. For us, just given the introduction that I have given, it's about relevance for schooling, and it's about engaging and re-engaging young people in schooling. I think we have to be really honest and open and courageous and be open to reframing and redesigning schools. Schools, as they have been, have done a wonderful job and got us to where we are. But the world has fundamentally changed, and the business of schooling needs to change. So it's about that relevance and what I call engaging kids. Kids, in my experience, in the traditional models of schooling, have been increasingly disconnecting. And then we have policies, and I don't know what it's like in your country, but certainly in ours, you get policies that actually interfere with the business of schooling rather than helping it out. We get external drivers like, you know, massive expenditure on putting hardware in schools or increasing testing or more accountability for teachers or giving, you know, good teachers more money based on their test results. Those sorts of things that actually don't help do the fundamental job of re-engaging the kids in their world and starting from an understanding of where they're at, not where others think they should be. So our challenge we've taken on is about re-engaging our kids and then looking at reframing their schooling experience. And at the heart of it, I suppose, is this view that we need to change the model of teaching from one of transference of information and then testing it at the end of some time, through to one of working collaboratively on understanding, co-constructing and knowledge. That's one part of it. The second part of it is that, you know, while we use a lot of technologies in our schools, this is not a technological issue, and it's not about computers and hardware and software. It's about good teaching, and teachers make the difference. That relates to the engagement. I think never before have we needed better teachers and more good teachers than we do now in this sort of age, because what drives us and the two core strategies we're putting in place to help us transform our schools and reframe them is the personalising of learning for everyone. With a particular focus on the child, that means starting where the child is at, what the child can do, knowing that deeply, engaging then with a relevant and meaningful learning program, using the range of capabilities and capacities that we have in the Web 2.0 world, and then deprivatising teacher practice, opening up so that teachers can share and collaborate. They can make sure that every learning experience that they have for young people is different, that it's relevant, and that they can reflect on that experience and make sure that when they do it again, it is better. So that requires collaboration, and then that takes you down a path of asking about what schools should look like, what sort of tools should young people have. I suppose at the heart of it is our belief that it's all about the learning space. We focus our energies into the learning space, supporting the learning within that learning space. And we know then that to support teachers working collaboratively, we need leaders in our schools, and our focus of our approach to leaders in our schools, principals and assistant principals, is on them being able to lead the learning. If the teachers don't know how to do it, it's our leaders' role to help them do it. And then, of course, at a system, it's about the system learning, how to help improve the learning at the school. So in our central office here, where we have some administrative responsibilities, we make sure our policies and our support is driven as deeply as possible into into each and every learning space. That's required us to fundamentally retool our schools. We've just finished a program with about 80 schools and 50,000 kids and 5,000 staff. We've opened up most of our learning spaces. We have very agile, flexible spaces. We're working with groups of students now rather than cohorts of students. We're working with our teachers in teams and they're working together. And we're finding that they have the answers. And can I tell you, that's what I want to say about the exciting times that we're in at the moment. That you see the work of these teachers and it just becomes so powerful. And what we say is, look, our teachers are co-learners, they're inquirers, they're questioners, and that's how we get them on the way to becoming expert. We've just launched this year a very singular focus on what we call learning by inquiring. And that's important. We didn't say learning by technology or learning through technology, etc. We said it's about learning by inquiring, that we all have a responsibility to learn about learning, collaborate and share, and it picks up those blurring of the lines. But right at the heart of it is the professional teacher who knows how to help improve young people's learning. How's that for a brief intro?
Yes, that's fantastic, Greg. I'll maybe just ask you a question at this point, if you don't mind. You're talking about this kind of culture now of, and I think we should point out, you know, within Sydney we're talking about the Diocese of Parramatta, is that right, that
yes,
you're the
right.
Executive Director of? Okay,
yes.
I mean, can you, maybe at this point I'm just thinking for listeners who may not be regular readers of your blog or have followed your work to date, can you say a bit about the context then of that part of Sydney or that particular diocese in terms of the demographics?
We're at the centre of Sydney. For those of you, well, Sydney's right, the capital of our state's right on the water. If you go any further, you fall off the edge and have to swim to New Zealand. Parramatta is the geographic centre of Sydney. We're about 15 kilometres from the centre of the Sydney business district. And Sydney stretches from the Pacific Ocean to our boundary, which is the Blue Mountains, which is our mountain range, and then you go off into what we call the bush. It's a highly urbanised area. It's one of the fastest growing area in Australia, certainly the fastest growing area in New South Wales. A lot of young people, a lot of migration. We have deep areas, and again, we have some of the poorest areas of any of our cities in Australia. So we have a very diverse clientele. We serve some of the poorest communities and we have some, you know, fairly wealthy areas. We have a lot of challenge with migration, particularly from Africa and from the Middle East. So our schools are dealing with that, as well as dealing with this sort of transformation. It's very multicultural, I might say. We actually celebrate that multicultural nature of our schools. And as I said, we've got about 50,000 students and 5,000 staff. All of them, you know, keen, active and eager learners, I might say, at all at various stages. But I don't think that we're any different than some of the areas I've been to. I've certainly been to Edinburgh and Glasgow. And, you know, you have the same sorts of challenges and issues that I've seen there. But we've just got to get the focus right on how we deal with these young people. Mm-hmm. This might be a bit of a, please jump in if I'm moving away from it, what you want me to talk about, but we've tried to focus on what makes a difference. And, you know, there are so many, you know, people looking for the silver bullet that's going to help improve schools. There's no silver bullet and there's no short. We have taken the approach that we've got to work with our teachers. That's what we've got to do. We've got to build the capacity. We've got to give our teachers the tools. We've got to give them the infrastructure. in our system, for example, and you know, coming from a Catholic system, it often amazes people. We don't ban access to any of the social medias. We have filtering on our internet systems, but we actually positively encourage the use of mobile phones, Twitter, Facebook, etc., etc., because these are the mediums that the young people are engaged in. This is this point of engagement. We want our schools to be a seamless experience of living, not something that happens 6 hours a day in some isolated area that do really funny and peculiar things like they used to do in the past. We want them to be a place where kids look forward to going to it in the morning. Yay, I'm going to school today, isn't that fantastic? Or isn't it bad that the holidays are starting because, you know, it's stopping me doing my learning? And that's right at the heart of what we're trying to do. And we know that with this connected online world, with the potentials and capabilities that they have, more and more you can find ways to go and find learning, and in fact, indeed, you can even schooling, you know, on the internet. That of itself is not powerful learning, because we know that it's the intersection of the teacher and the student that makes the difference. That's why we keep coming back to this issue of the teacher at the centre of this in a collaborative process, reflecting on their learning. And that relates to some of the questions that I've been asked, actually, about, you know, how do we know this, and you know, who are the guides and the inspirations for us?
Just picking up at this point, Colin Morris, who is I'd have to say a CPD legend within Scottish education, he's mentioned that he's following the discussion live at edutalk.cc, and he's mentioning it's great to hear you talking about learning at all levels, you know, children, teachers, leaders, and indeed the system. And I suppose following on from that, Greg, you know, you're talking about learning by inquiring, and you mentioned about inquiry, reflection, collaboration, and questioning among your teachers, and about how that's so vital. But how have you managed to enculture the teaching profession in such a way? I'm thinking about looking at the Scottish context, maybe to bring that in for a moment. You know, we are rewriting our professional standards. Is it a case of putting it in there and hoping that CPD providers and others will run with that kind of learning, or whether that's in a school or district level, or whether it's one-off events? How do you actually go about enculturing teachers in that way? That whole ethos, I suppose, that whole mindset that the academics would talk about of inquiry, that it's far more than it is something deep.
But a great question, and again, no magic answers. Our approach to this has been, you never prescribe it. I mean, we have, you know, institutes, we have federal and state teaching institutes, all those sorts of things. These are the sorts of things I was talking about before, that have got multitudes of standards, and people have died in the ditch over the words around some of those standards. At the end of the day, they make no difference into the school unless you actually change the fundamental experience of the teachers in school. So one of the first things that we did, we were always talking about learning. And it's like Richard Elmore and all the literature tells us that if it's not there, it's not there. And if it's not there, you've got to teach people and so that they do understand it. So, you know, that Elmore instructional core. If it's not in the instructional core, well, somebody's got to make sure that you teach the teachers. So we do that in a non-threatening and a non-challenging way. And we don't do it by having an expert come in and say, you do this. We say, what are your students doing? How do you know that what they're doing? What would you like to do with them? And then et cetera, et cetera. So it's been a journey of discovery at the level of the learning space in situ, in context with the teachers, and valuing them. And we find ways then to share their practice and celebrate that practice. When we find things that work, we say, well, go on, have a look at what they're doing. We take the emphasis on the external. And this is the important issue for systems. And you know, we run a major system here in Australia. And we we've worked very hard to get very clear where you make a difference. And the difference is made in the classroom, and then it's the principal and the system's responsibility to get very clear how you support the teacher in that space. And that means we drive as much as possible of the support into that space, and we encourage innovation and collaboration. We have now developed a range of, we haven't developed, but our schools are developing professional learning communities that are both physical and virtual. All of our subject areas and strategic initiatives now have blogs where people share blogs and wikis. We have a range of NINGs. One of our most powerful NINGs is around numeracy, where teachers are sharing not only good theory and good practice, but the evidence that would support that. And the teachers are feeling valued. We have a strategic intent. And the strategic intent is in two parts, but it has one focus. And we say that our system of schools is going to ensure that every child experiences improvement in their learning. So we say that everyone, not just those that can and can't, but every child will experience some improvement in learning, and our teachers will have a professionally rewarding working life. The two of those go together. So the challenge is there, that between the teacher and the student and their interactions, that will improve learning using evidence, etc. Now, we have taken that as a school responsibility for the leader and the leading as in the community and for the system to do that. And then we've reshaped the range of support. Ultimately, it comes down to a discussion about learning. You can go into most of our schools and, well, I'd say all of our schools, and you'll find robust discussions about learning, and they're finding the answers to these questions. The answers to these questions are not external. And if you look at any of the literature, and it's around the world, right from the OECD stuff right through to the latest stuff that, I don't know, John Hattie's just published in his book called Visible Learning. As John Hattie says, the beliefs and commitments of teachers have the greatest influence on student achievement. So you need to believe all learners can learn, and then you tap into that teacher passion. I suppose if you wanted any strategy, that's what we take the focus. One of the questions that I was sent, that one of Pardoe asked me, what's been the single most powerful influence on my thinking and action? And that's a great question, because I'd say to you, it's been my brother. My brother's 15 months younger than me. We went to the same school, same family, etc., had the same opportunities. Yet he and I have vastly different life experiences, because he thinks he was a failure at school. He hated school. He couldn't wait to get out of school. I liked school. I was successful at school. All those sorts of things. And I asked myself, and I was just recently talking to my brother, Jared, and he still passionately hates school. You mentioned school to him at the age of 56, and he almost shakes with the revulsion he has for it. And it was because, the school said he was a failure. And I just can't believe it, even today that should be a young person's experience of school. It should be quite the opposite. So that's sort of driven me, I suppose, and I haven't realised it until only recently, because it should be every child's experience that they love school. You can't fail school, for goodness sake. I mean, it's ridiculous, but, we structure and institutionalise failure into most of our curriculum programs. So no wonder kids disengage from school.
Greg, I wonder, could I just break in and ask a wee question here? I was really impressed about the way your teaching staff are obviously taking on all this new stuff, new attitudes, changing practice. And I wondered how that, the CPD in your schools is organised as to time. When do they get the time to watch other people's practice? And is that built into teachers' conditions, or how does it work?
Yeah. you ask all the good practical questions. When we started this, if we went by existing instructions process, there was no time and we had limited resources. The only answer to that question, by looking at it from the old way of doing it, was to add more resources. So we found that our recurrent costs, all our costs were on an exponential path, rising, and that the when we looked at the performance data and the change data, we were flatlining. So quite clearly, something wasn't working. So what we have to do is break the paradigm. How we've done it is to actually change what happens, the way you go about the work in the schools. We've embarked on a very aggressive program here in Australia. I don't know if you do know, but as part of the global financial crisis in Australia, our federal government decided to invest in excess of $30 billion into our schools and provide the opportunity for all of our primary schools, every school across Australia, 7,500 of them, provided about $2 million for schools to invest in their physical plant. And that was to keep the building industry and our manufacturing industry going. And it's been very, very successful. But that allowed us then to rethink and fast-track a lot of the work we were doing on exactly this point. You can't do this work that we're talking about, engaging, privatising, deprivatising and personalising learning external to the school. So we needed to reshape our schools so that we could allow teachers to work in different ways. And we've put teachers now together and removed them from the classroom so that they work closely together. So most of the work that now goes on in the normal time period of schools. We have, for example, one of our primary schools, the entire primary school, just in excess of 200 children, are just in the one big learning space. Now, it's a very sophisticated space. It's just not like a barn and people are throwing it together. I want you to think of what good teachers can do when they design spaces that allow them ultimate flexibility and allow them to come together and collaborate in real time, in situ, in context, with real issues. That's led them to rethinking the way they go about their own professional learning. So we don't have arguments about, in the industrial conditions we have here in New South Wales, if you are a primary teacher, you are supposed to be in a position where you have one teacher to 30 children. So if we go over, that is an industrial problem. Well, we have spaces now where there are 200-plus children and have a whole lot of teachers working. And you change the game plan. So the issue is not about the number. The issue is about the work and how you go about the work. And our teachers are finding marvellous ways to work together that allows them to spend much more time in collaboration. We're also working with them outside of the normal school time, and our strategy has been to work with them and ask them to find the solutions. And we've found that in that changing practice, we've been able to not infringe on their industrial entitlements, but find new ways of doing it. There's much, much more to do, though. I mean, I've got to say that. We've got to move beyond this idea of schools. And, you know, in New South Wales, we have four 10-week terms. And we've got to break the nexus between the hours that you teach, particularly in our secondary schools, our 12 to 18-year-olds, where we have teachers work defined in terms of 20 hours face-to-face contact time. What's that mean when you've got the capacity for kids to learn, be connected in very different ways? And our teachers are finding the answers to those questions. And it's a journey we're on. There's not a blueprint, and there's not a one-size-fits-all solution to this. It's actively working with our teachers, and I think over a period of time we can map some change, seeing things that work and things that don't work, and the teachers are finding the solutions. The second thing I'd say is, just looking at the responsibility of the system, we bring to our system, I say this to our teachers, we expect you to be the best, so we bring the best to you. We have a program here that this is just an example. Once a year, we bring who we think's the best in the world to our system, and we have a an educational lecture series. And this year we've got Andy Hargraves coming. We've had people like Michael Fullan, John Hattie, the people out there who are stretching. And it actually helps them reinforce, they get the message, well, you know, these are the trends. This is just something that's happening here in isolation. So we're giving them a bit of a sense of the openness. We're encouraging our leaders to get out and have a look around and connecting them with a range of different schools and building more of these professional learning communities. So we're changing the game plan, if you like, from the ground up. One of the things we always say is everybody will say, oh, yes, that's good, but, you know, our Board of Studies has got a mandated curriculum, or, you know, we can only do this many classes. That we say, look, they're excuses. Imagine a new way of working and how we can get around those, and I think we're finding those answers.
Greg, if don't mind me coming in here, it's David Noble again. I'm interested, earlier on in the show you were talking about how it's not about, you know, the technology's changing the world, but it's not about the technology in terms of in terms of excellent pedagogy and great teachers working in these new learning spaces. But I just want to pick out a couple of kind of statements or quotes from your blog recently. You know, you seem to bemoan the maybe some of the uses of technology within education and within classrooms. You talk about technology sometimes being used as the $1,000 pencil, and you then go on to ask, you know, what will we do differently pedagogically with the new technologies that we have. And I'm also interested in the kind of history that you have with technology. I mean, you have you write to a wonderful blog, blueyonder.wordpress.com, and I've seen you mention previously about the Catholic Education Network, which sounds to me as if it was a kind of online community. I don't know whether that still runs, and that might be of interest to people in Scotland, because we've been developing, you know, our national intranet, and it looks like maybe as we engage more with CPD and reflection and inquiry, that because of our complex lives, we might need to look online more to online networks or online opportunities. Yep. So where does technology fit, and how have you come to this point?
I'll deal with both those. I'll do them within two sections, because the second one you raise about Catholic Network Australia is important in the context of what I was talking about, understanding what systems can do and schools don't need to do. When we were thinking through all this over the last several years, the internet, the World Wide Web in its early days, schools are rushing out trying to connect and bandwidth, and we have, you know, some schools getting good connectivity, others couldn't afford it. We could never get a migration page where we can increase bandwidth for everyone, all those sort of things. So in the end, we said, you know, and talking to our federal government, we're saying, yes, we're going to build they call it a national broadband network. That's been on our federal government policy agenda for at least a decade. And guess what? It's still not here, even though they say they are rolling it out. That's supposed to be able to connect everybody. So we built our own network, and that's a national network. It's across all Catholic systemic schools across Australia. We have about 1,700 schools on it, and basically at the moment it is a fibre backbone guaranteeing minimum connectivity for primary and secondary schools, and it gives us a strategic growth path so we can increase it. And we can leverage the capacity by going on scale and turning this into an enterprise function. So we've done that. So that's taken the responsibility off schools and their budgeting, so that we've aggregated the expenditure, we get the leverage, and it's an enterprise system. And that's a strategic decision we made, that we need to move from cottage to enterprise. The business of schooling in today's world requires enterprise, because we've got to bring everything to scale, and that's the way the world works anyway. The second point, going back to the comment about the $1,000 pencil, again, we have a program of providing hardware into our schools. Again, another one of our federal government's, one of our past federal government's initiatives was called the Digital Education Revolution. They spent $14 billion by giving every student from the age of 15 through to 18, from our year 9 to year 12, their own computer, and said, you know, this is now, we're a 21st century learning system. Well, you know, if you don't change the practice, the tool doesn't matter. I mean, you know, a hammer in the hand of a bad carpenter is not going to ensure you get a quality building. The issue for us is around the learning, the teacher, and the curriculum. There's no point having a computer replacing just the pen and paper. So what you wrote on the pen and paper, you can now do on the computer or turn it into a PowerPoint. We're saying you need those tools, but we need to use those tools appropriately. And in many cases, you see them. They're nothing more than a $1,000 pencil because they're very low level of the usage. You know, one of the big policy drivers across the world to see is, you know, one-to-one computing. Well, one-to-one computing of it in and of itself means nothing. I mean, the issue is now in a world where it's one-to-many, and in many education jurisdictions where they ban mobile phones and mobility is at the core of what we do, it makes a nonsense to say that you're going to improve learning by having every child have a computer. Of itself, connectivity and mobility is important, but you need to ask a range of questions about what's the nature of the learning, how will the learner use it, how will the teacher use it, and what is appropriate for them to use and when to use it. They're the discussions we're having now with our teachers and asking our teachers to give us their understanding of the appropriate practice and then saying, well, how do we use the tool the best possible way? You know, it reminds me of the old days where we used to have fights over whether you have, you know, I'm a Mac or I'm a PC user. Well, I mean, that doesn't matter. I mean, they're not the issues. We're agnostic about all those. The issue is what you're doing with it and how you use it that's important. So technology is vital for the work you use. And it is ubiquitous. The thing that we have to understand, I think, and I use this as an example, in early 2000, Steve Jobs took the name Computers off Apple Computers, and it's just called it Apple. Now, if you go into any Apple store, you don't even see the word Apple, you just see the logo. So the issue is now that, as Apple will tell you, it's lifestyle. Apple are in the lifestyle business, not the technology business. Schools are in the learning business, not the technology business. But too often we've said, well, the answer is going to be technology and connecting schools. Apple's reshaped the world and our understanding of the music world. They're about to do so in the printing world, the entertainment world, the movie world, the newspaper world. And the same sort of thing in the car industry. You're buying a car now, don't worry about the technology. You're buying lifestyle now. We've got an ad for the new Honda here going in Australia for the other you. You can buy a car for the other you, and they've got about five people on the screen. So don't worry about the technology. It's a lifestyle thing. So we're trying to make the technology a seamless and an invisible part of the learning process, because schools are about schooling, not about technology. And teachers are change agents, not technology as change agents. I mean, a lot of these things need to be unpacked in detail, but does that give you the framework?
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe John wants to come in at this point.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I'm kind of very interested in various technology things we're talking about here. Greg, I'm understanding that your schools are pretty much one-to-one.
Yes, we across our schools we'd have that capability. Yes.
Yeah, and you also are open to bring your own devices.
Yes, we're certainly our approach to this is make it as seamless as possible, and we've constructed our network, and this comes back to our strategic decision several years ago. to invest in wireless. We said mobility is the future, and at least 3.5 years, 4 years ago, we said the cloud is the future. So our architecture is a service-oriented architecture, and you know, software as a service. Now, if you have that as your backbone and infrastructure, it leads you down the path. Well, you can open your network and use any technologies. In the business sector, the industries outside of education, people take their own mobile phones to work and use their mobile phones, and increasingly want to use the devices that are seamless for them. Nobody wants to go to work if they've got a high-end computer capability at home, which most people have now with these interactive TVs, and go to work and work on some clunky thing that that's locked down and controlled. So we're encouraging the use of those sorts of technologies, because that's the reality of the world. It goes back to what I said right at the very beginning about the seamless nature of that. Now, to allow all these things to happen, you have to have a very sophisticated planning process in place. We spend a lot of time designing our network. One of the first things, again, we said was the business of schooling in today's world is enterprise level. It's not cottage industry. We keep treating schools like the little sort of corner shop down there. They're quaint and cutesy, and they operate by themselves as if they're some sort of cottage industry. They're not. They are very sophisticated businesses, and they need sophisticated back-end support, and we need to connect them if we're going to bring all this to scale so that every child has the same opportunity, no matter what your geographic area, what your postcode is, what your family background is, etc., etc. So that means we need to have that plan, that infrastructure in place, so that we can allow all sorts of responses. We are putting, we have one-to-one capability virtually across our schools, but I'm not sure that that's the best way to answer that problem, because going back to the basic proposition, it's not the tool, it's the user and the craftsman. And we're talking about the teachers here, that's the issue, it's not the tool.
Sure. One of the things I've kind of picked up on listening to various one-to-one discussions and bring your own device into school, I mean, always one-to-one can be very powerful. You want this technology to be invisible. But if you're a teacher and you've got a class of, well, maybe you've not got the same sort of constraints of class numbers, but you've got a group of learners who've all brought their own device, you're going to get a range of devices. And I just wondered, was there any staff nervousness about this, about being faced with the same classroom where there could be, people with phones, people with MacBooks, people with PCs, people with all sorts of devices?
Definitely. There's great disquiet and concern about it, but again, I wouldn't construct a proposition the way that you put it. We're not just saying, well, come in and just bring your own device and all that. This is what schools have to work at. We're saying to them, mobility, the cloud, technology, are all there in the mix. Where you are at the moment, how your teachers are working, what is the best mix in those? So the schools will work those through. So the teachers will, if they don't have that capability and capacity to deal with their lesson structure around bringing your own device, well, don't do it. So it's not like an either or that somehow we've just said, well, any device counts. It comes down to the school and the way the school will want to work. For example, we have iPads, very, very powerful tool and a lot of take-up in our schools. We've got a range of schools doing different things with them and changing the way they go about them. And then the kids being able to use their own iPads. But that's because the teacher's done the groundwork at the back end. And if the teachers are not ready for it, of course, it's just poor practice. This is a change management issue. And we're dealing with that change management issue by not mandating, by working with the school community and asking them to resolve the issues. What they can be sure of from a system point of view is that they can connect And the issue then is, you know, what they're connecting to and, you know, what each schools have for them to connect with.
We're just coming to the last couple of minutes of today's show. If you're listening to the live stream and you have got any final comments or questions for Greg, then you can email edutalker, edutalkr, at hotmail.co.uk, or if you're on Twitter, if you just include the hashtag edutalk, then we'll be able to pick up. There's quite a lot of discussion going on online just now. I know that a couple of people on Twitter who are listening to the live stream are having a discussion about the most appropriate time of the week where CPD or engagement in professional learning communities can take place. And I think, Greg, you've kind of explained to quite a degree about how that actually works in practice in your own area. I wonder if I might just finish. I know that I made you aware of some questions that were sent in beforehand, Greg. I'll maybe pick out a couple. You know, I'm sure you've had a chance to think about Julie Watt, who's on Twitter, asked, and no doubt it's somebody who, you know, speaks internationally, Greg, and who you've mentioned many international experts come to Sydney. She asks, are there any changing trends, and if so, what are they? And I would also like to just at this point bring in Morven Skinner's question. Morven's a student teacher in the Glasgow area. Do you think that teachers can become too stagnant if they're in the same school for too long? Should they move, or I wonder if she's asking, should they be encouraged or made to move maybe after 10 years or so?
They're both very good questions, and they do go together. The changing trends, and if so, what they are. I mean, the trends that I see around the world are this business of reframing schools and moving away from concepts of just the bricks and mortar. That's a global trend, as we find virtualization and connectivity. But the trend that I think is the most powerful is the understanding that at the heart of all this is teacher learning and building teacher capacity. If there's one trend that's really starting to take root across the world, it's this understanding and commitment to building teacher capacity and saying that the answers lie within, not without. Given the scope of the work that goes on in schools, the sheer size of it, you know, like, it's not an industry where you could sack every teacher and then say, well, we'll bring in a new lot. The only answer we have is in teacher learning and then system learning and school learning. We are very precise here around what we call our strategic cohesion, meaning that our central office gets out of the way of the work that goes on in the schools, but has a very tight framework and relates to another question we're asked about how we look at improvement programs and work with schools. And we do that by embedding those in the school and making the rule, and then we look at the evidence and we say, show us the evidence. If you want to talk about improving students' literacy, we have people come and say, well, you're talking about improving students' literacy, you're saying this is the case, show me. Let's go and walk and have a look, and we see it, and we can collaborate and do it in a constructive, supportive way, not an accusatory sort of way and then a disciplined sort of way. That is the trend, and I think we're getting the other trend is that common sense is starting to emerge around some policy cohesion about what does make a difference, so that we don't get all these muddle-headed, wrong-headed approaches, to not name any countries, but, you know, like leaving kids behind and having high-stakes testing, etc., etc. Or, in our own case, of just putting, you know, devices into schools and not working out about how you work with students. One of the big knock-on effects from our federal government's approach on putting devices into schools is that they immediately caused problems because we had to upgrade the power into most schools and nobody even thought of that. Isn't that an interesting thing in the 21st century world? They didn't realise computers needed power. So if you want a muddle-headed policy issue. Coming back to the other question about the moving teachers, again, I wouldn't approach it. The question is not about, you know, moving teachers and that will make them not be stagnant. The issue is engaging them in collaboration. And we're finding they actually move virtually and sometimes physically when they're engaged, and they will go to where they can make a difference. And sometimes that difference is in the very school that they've been in for some time. So we have some remarkable experiences of turnaround where teachers have taught one way, have now changed completely the way they teach. And I also want to say at this stage, our most innovative at the edge school in this system is led by a 70-year-old principal who is so passionate, who's just been recognised internationally and in the US for the work they're doing. It is our highest performing school, and it has the most traditional, or had the most traditional group of teachers in it, but they've fundamentally reshaped how they've gone about it, not by importing new teachers, but by engaging their teachers in the fundamental question of how to engage kids in today's world. So the answer is not to move them, the answer is around the engagement, and it's about collaboration, it's about deprioritising the practice. The trend globally is to take down the walls, physically and virtual, that separate teachers, because you have to actually do the work by doing the work. You know, good doctors, good plumbers, good builders get better by working with good doctors and good plumbers and good builders. We have to take the walls down and allow them to collaborate, to trust them, support them, put in the frameworks and challenge and stretch them. And I want to finish on this one, finding ways to celebrate the learning. And that's one of the things that we find is one of the most powerful drivers when we get our teachers together and they share their practice. And they share what makes a difference. I tell you what, there's no more powerful driver to improvement of kids' learning.
Thanks very much, Greg. Colleagues, you've been listening to this morning to Greg Whitby, the Executive Director of Schools in the Diocese of Parramatta in Sydney, Australia. It's been fascinating, Greg. I know that, picking up on the chatter on Twitter, that we've had a number of people listening live, and it's sparked a whole load of thinking and comments online. So maybe yourself, Greg, or anyone else listening, whether you're on Twitter or not, you might like to go to twitter.com, and if you just type in EduTalk into the search box, you'll be able to follow some of the, I suppose, the kind of back channel discussion that's been taking place during the show, and there's been a whole load of rich ideas and seams of discussion within there. So thank you very much again, Greg. It's been fantastic to have you along. I'm always fascinated about how technology can work so well and really sit in the background. We've been talking about a whole host of matters around, really professionalism, professional learning, and improving the quality of learning in schools, and it seems to be so many ideas that can apply right across the world. And as somebody who is interested in professionalism and education and learning, but also technology, it's lovely how we can use technologies such as Skype and Simple Blogs, etc., to actually pull together such a rich and enjoyable discussion. And that the technology these days rarely lets us down, which is fantastic.
I've just made this observation. This is a classic example of what we're doing now, of what goes on in a lot of our schools. We haven't had the technology that we're using here, but it's allowed us to do a whole range of things we could never have done before, and done in a very seamless way. We wouldn't even know that we're on the internet and using Skype and all those sorts of things. That's what's going on in our schools. Uh-huh. And it's not the technology per se.
Absolutely, yeah. And there's a... As a good Scotsman, I always delight in the fact that it costs. I know that nowadays we talk about costs in terms of resources and time, but financially, no cost to put this together. Unless I'm keeping you from an important meeting, Greg, so I won't whitter on any longer.
The Scots don't have a mortgage on that, can I tell you? We all face that challenge. And can I say, Scotland is one of those places that, as you said, I've been there several times, I go to, because, of the way you approach this. I mean, when you talk about international trends, don't forget what's going on in your own patch. Great innovation. You've got some great thinkers there about education. You've done a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we certainly do. The tweets are coming in thick and fast, but I will leave it there, Greg, and as I say, people can continue the discussion in whichever way they would like from this point forward. Greg is, of course, on Twitter as well as blogging regularly at do you just want to remind folk of the blog address, Greg?
Yes, it's Blue Yonder, BLUYONDER .wordpress.com, and we'd welcome that you into that community. It's a fabulous community. It's global, and we've got some great discussions going on. And I've just finished my post that will go up probably tomorrow or early next week. It's covered many of the sort of things we've been discussing here.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, we'll finish up there, folks, and thank you also to John for helping to set this up, and I really enjoyed listening to John's questions as well as those that were sent into the show before the event, and also some of the comments that we picked up on during the live show. Next Wednesday, even though it's during the Scottish Easter Schools holiday, Wednesday the 4th of April, probably at 4:30 PM British Summer Time, Tom Hamilton, who's the Director of Educational Policy at the General Teaching Council for Scotland, is due to give a talk and take some questions, no doubt, on the topic of the changing role of the General Teaching Council and the development of a system of professional updates. So I hope you can join us then, or as ever with Greg's talk and discussion today and every other show during the first half of 2012, you can catch that tonight's show and all the others at edutalk.cc if you just click on the Radio Edutalk archive. So until next time, take care everyone.
Okay, can I just add my thanks to David's Greg? Thanks a lot. I'm just going to cut the stream now and return Radio Edutalk to random things from our archive. So, everybody on the internet, good night, and we'll see you next week.